This is Tea Earl Grey Heart, an unofficial Star Trek fan podcast from the Other Side Podcast Network. Where no one has gone before. Hello and welcome to episode 39 of TL Grey Hot, an unofficial Star Trek fan podcast from the Other Side Podcast Network. My name is Dave, and I am joined this week by someone who, if I tried to transfer the entire contents of his brain over dial-up internet, it would take almost 11,589 years to download. It is direct, live from Switzerland. It's Yannick. Hi, Yannick.
Hi. I think if you just get the content of my brain, it's going to take a lot less time than that.
Maybe I should have said the storage capacity of your brain rather than the contents of it. Would be a bit better. No, that was a weird one to try and work out. Apparently, according to a study that was done back in 2010, the imagined, because obviously there's no way you can prove this, the imagined maximum capacity of the human brain is 2.5 petabytes of storage.
Wow.
And if you try to squeeze that over a 56k modem, yeah, it would take a while.
Yeah. yes.
Yeah.
I wonder how people can, you know, compute those numbers.
I have no idea. I think it's something to do with the number of synapses in the brain, which apparently is, they're like on-off switches, bits, if you like. I don't know. I don't know. Not a Scooby, but apparently it's kind of relevant to tonight's episode, actually, because large numbers and miscalculations because one or two little issues with things that are happening in this episode, which isn't a surprise to anybody, I'm sure. Anyway, on tonight's episode, we are going to be reviewing Star Trek The Next Generation Season 1, Episode 6, Where No One Has Gone Before. And we have a roundup of the latest news from the world of Star Trek.
Exciting news.
Very exciting news. Well, very exciting news, and I'm not quite sure what this actually is news.
The second one. Yeah, it's news.
It is news. No question, it is news. But I suppose that is subjective. I'm sure Martin will be very happy about it, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Anyway, let's crack on, I think, with our review of Star Trek The Next Generation, Season 1, Episode 6, Where No One Has Gone Before. So, in the teaser, the USS Enterprise D has met up with the Excelsior-class starship USS Fearless in order to take on a Starfleet propulsion specialist who is going to perform an upgrade on the warp drive. He's already performed this upgrade on the Fearless, as well as the USS Ajax. Both of these ships reported an increase in engine efficiency. Riker, however, is not convinced. He and Data have run a control test of the formulae that the engineer, Kaczynski, has sent over and found them to have no effect. Picard reasons that there's no harm in letting him come over and attempt the upgrade, especially since it doesn't change the hardware.
The beginning of this teaser and also the flowing scenes, I thought they were filmed very strangely, very close to the characters, lots of close-ups. I don't know if it was something to do with the story or just they tried something else, but I thought it was visually strange.
It could be something as simple as a different director.
Yeah.
I didn't notice it personally, but... Riker is still sceptical, so Picard sends him to meet Kaczynski when he beams aboard, along with his assistant. Riker, Troy, and Chief Engineer Argyle go to meet him in the transporter room. Kaczynski is pompous and arrogant. He asks why the captain isn't there to meet him and demands to be taken to engineering. As he leaves, Troy comments to Riker that Kaczynski is as he appears, loud and arrogant, but she can sense nothing from his assistant, not even his presence.
I didn't like Kaczynski at first, and not at second.
No, he certainly came across as one of those people that kind of tramples all over everybody's feelings and rank. He's got no respect for authority, or anybody.
Yeah, we've already mentioned that sometimes on Star Trek episodes, then there's someone at Starfleet headquarters who decided that some random guy could have access to everything and doesn't have to respond to anyone. And that happens a lot.
Exactly. And I observed exactly the same thing. The idea that somebody has come in from outside Enterprise who has apparently got Starfleet authority to be let loose on Enterprise, and acts as though they have the full authority of, you know, whoever the officer in chief is of Starfleet. And has the attitude to match.
Yeah. That stays in the show.
Yeah. But I think probably my quote of the week, yet again, has come out of the teaser. After so I think it was it Argyle that took him to engineering, and as they left, Troy said to Riker, "Something about this concerns me, and I don't know what." I mean, like, duh.
Just like
the whole thing concerns things. You.
Yeah, we have yet another chief engineer. So I don't know what the turnover is in engineering on the Enterprise, but seems like it's the chief engineer of the week.
Well, this is episode 6, and I think we've met 3 so far, haven't we?
3 already? Yeah, that was the one during the Wesley Crusher incident.
That was McDougal.
McDougal. Then Argyle. There was probably another one.
Yeah.
For the first episode.
Yeah, so Memory Alpha says, Lieutenant Commander Argyle was one of the chief engineers aboard the Enterprise D. Apparently he is later on in the series, next week's episode.
Makes sense.
Hang on. Yes, next week's episode is in, and also episode 13.
Okay,
so which obviously will be in a while.
He lasted longer than the average ones.
Well, yeah. I mean, if you count McDougal as being in 2 episodes because he was in the pilot.
Yeah. But,
hey ho, we shall see what happens with chief engineers of the future. Okay, then on to Act 1. In engineering, Riker questions Kaczynski about what he's going to do and asks him to explain his formulae. At first, Kaczynski resists, but eventually agrees to explain himself in the most arrogant and patronising way possible to both Riker and Argyle. Meanwhile, Wesley, who is in engineering working on a school project, watches the assistant enter the formulae onto the auxiliary panel and suggests various changes to the inputs. Kaczynski shoves Riker out of the way and shouts at the boy, meaning Wesley, to not play with the auxiliary panel that his assistant is sitting at. As Kaczynski and his assistant prepare to test out the adjustments, Picard orders LaForge to take the Enterprise to warp 1.5. Yeah. And don't like where this is going.
No.
At all.
Whoever was in charge of the wardrobe should be fired. Because of Wesley's atrocious,
I don't even know what that was. It was like a beige coloured sweater.
Yeah.
In fact, I have seen that colour sweater before, and I think Kirk was wearing it. I don't think it was the same design, yes, but I think it was the same kind of like mushroom beige color.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Well, so, I said they should get fired. Maybe it was you know a fashion thing back in 1987, but yeah, no.
No, I don't think so. No.
Sorry, person in charge of the wardrobe, but no, you can get away with that.
And sincere apologies to 1987 as well.
Yes. Kaczynski referring to Wesley as boy was only the first one, the first of many in these episodes going and from everybody.
Yeah, I was going to say, not just Kaczynski either.
Yeah.
Luckily, something happens about that one, which is...
Yes.
Is good. And yeah, I'm not going to jump on that one.
Don't spoil a 1987 show.
I have to remember, you know, this is the first time that I've watched these episodes properly. I don't remember this episode at all. But yes, it is 33 years old and is probably not really likely to be a spoiler to anybody.
No. Although I'm pretty sure there are some new fans that who have never seen Next Gen, so
and are using our show as a method of guiding them through.
Yes,
quite right. Yes. As the ship accelerates, both Kaczynski and his assistant enter various information into the console. Suddenly, an alarm goes off, and Kaczynski shouts at the assistant, who has made an error. Outside the ship, the Enterprise's engines suddenly engage with a massive burst of speed. The assistant grabs the console and starts to phase in and out of view, but this was only noticed by Wesley. And I'm like, what species is this dude?
Yeah. And he's got strange hands. Probably doesn't help with the buttons on the console.
Now, this is where I have to really take a kicking for not being observant, because my observation of the size of his hands actually occurs towards the end of Act 5. I didn't notice that he had like, he was basically wearing inflated gloves on his hand is what it looked like. Mm-hmm. But it never even occurred to me. I was watching him like poking bits of screen and bits of console. And I never even noticed that his hands were like twice the size of anybody else's.
Yeah, and big fingers and only two of them or something like this. Yeah.
Really weird.
Yeah. Very 80s special effects. You know, Tron-like.
Oh, the warp pattern on the screen.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah, that was quite good.
The outside, the effects from... when the Enterprise is in space, you know,
with like planets and things coming towards them.
Blue and pink traces and lines and things like that.
Yeah.
Very Tron.
Yeah, very much so.
And the music goes with it.
The special effects actually weren't bad for 87.
I had a doubt when I watched that. I think what we've seen right here is the remastered edition on Netflix, because the special effect looked very sharp. I didn't expect that from a 1987 TV show. So I think that's the remastered version. But I'm not sure they've redone the special effect, just you know, announced them.
Yeah.
Very, 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 very 80s.
TNG was one of the ones done on film, wasn't it?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
So they had that that ability. Mm-hmm. On the bridge, LaForge tells the captain they are passing warp 10, and Data later says that. I know. Knowing what we know about what happened in Voyager. And Data later says that their velocity is off the scale. The Enterprise hurtles through space, I love that phrase, with phenomena whizzing past at extremely high speed. Picard orders that they reverse engines, which Data comments on having never been done at their current speed. And as Picard quite rightly points out, no one's ever been at that speed before. The Enterprise then drops out of warp. When asked for the ship's position, LaForge replies incredulously that they have travelled 2,700,000 light years.
Yeah, it's like, you know, just outside the reach of of conventional warp engines.
Yeah. So is this the same warp 10 or not? Because if it is, then this is an anachronism, because the Voyager one is the one they said is the first Federation ship to go that fast. Whereas actually, so, this one was. I know they changed the scale.
I agree with you. Ooh. And I also don't agree with you.
Okay.
Later on in this episode, Kosinski talks about the warp barrier. So I think it's the same warp 10 as Voyager. But later on, even later than that, we learn that, in fact, the Enterprise never went faster than warp 1.5.
We know that the Enterprise never registered as going faster than 1.5. That doesn't necessarily mean that it didn't.
Yeah, but given the explanations that we have later on, I think that this remark that they were breaching warp 10 is actually a mistake in the script compared to everything else. It would be consistent that at this point they were not traveling at more than warp 1.5, and it would explain everything. If you see what I mean.
I do. I can't say what I want to say because we've not had it yet. So wait until a little bit later on, and then I'll make a comment on it. But this is the only time that LaForge mentions any speed above warp 1.5.
Yes.
So, yeah, we'll see. The Enterprise is now in galaxy M33, and LaForge calculates that at maximum warp it will take them over 300 years to get home. I don't think so. Sure, if...
Why?
Well, their maximum warp is 9 point something. Let's say 9.9, okay?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Now, that means 10 times the speed of light.
No.
Does it not?
No. That means almost infinite speed.
Oh, it's a... Whatchamacallit?
It's a logarithmic
scale.
Yes.
Okay.
So, warp 10 is almost... Warp 10 is...
Is everywhere, yeah.
Infinite speed. So.
Okay, so... How are they? How are they able to calculate velocity of warp speed?
They learned that at the Starfleet Academy, and then it stays a secret for everybody else. They have to swear at the end of the Starfleet Academy to never explain to anyone how they. Computes
it's like the Colonel's secret recipe. Is that what you're saying?
Yes.
Right, okay.
That's
yeah. Now, the only reason I say that is, being that it's a logarithmic scale, the velocity difference between warp 9.91 and 9.92 is going to be near infinite at that higher scale. So how is he able to work out that it'll take over 300 years? You know, 30,000 years is over 300 years.
Yeah,
So how accurately are we supposed to interpret this?
Yes, that doesn't mean anything. It will take over something, doesn't mean anything.
Mm.
As you said, 3,000 years is over 300, so
yeah.
Maybe it just doesn't know. It's no less than.
He could have said it'll take over a year.
Pfft. Yeah.
Anyway.
Was that the premise of Star Trek Voyager? Do you think when they wanted, then they started to design Voyager, they thought, what can we do? And then someone had just watched this episode and said, oh, I have an idea. Let's let's make Voyager go far away and take 300 years to come back. Because that's Voyager.
Well, actually, that's Discovery. Yes.
Yeah. Well,
except it was 900 years rather than
yeah.
No,
Discovery sent 900 years in the future. But Voyager that's exactly that. The entity, the caretaker, sent Voyager like at the other side of the galaxy, and then it would take forever for Voyager to come back.
Mm.
So that's exactly that.
Just a slight tangent here, not that we haven't been mm-hmm. already. I wonder whether that's going to be the basis of Discovery, that they can do positional jumping, and we know that warp 10 means they can be absolutely anywhere they like at that particular moment. Maybe the next stage to that one is then going to be time.
Yeah, but why would they come back? They went forward to prevent events from happening. So why would they go to the future and then come back?
Why would they go 2,700,000 light years away and then come back?
Because they didn't go 2,700,000 light years away to prevent something or to, you know, with a goal. It was just a mistake that they didn't want to go there.
I suppose.
Discovery, the crew of Discovery wanted to go somewhere else or sometime else.
They agreed to go. I don't think they wanted to go. Yeah. They were kind of forced into doing it, but yes.
Yeah.
Yes, they agreed to do it. Mm-hmm. Anyway, back to the Next Generation. We're now on Act 2. Picard records a log entry, musing that Starfleet may actually never receive it.
Yeah.
LaForge reports that a message has already been sent to Starfleet, which Data says, at subspace, will take 51 years, 10 months, 9 weeks, 16 days, and then Picard snaps at him to stop.
Yeah, Data being Data.
Data being Data. But for one thing, when you're doing time estimates, do not mix months and weeks. You can't compare months and weeks. You either do years, months, and days, or years, weeks, and days. You can't do years, months, weeks, and days.
Yes, because 10 months, 9 weeks, and 16 days is actually 12 months and 23 days. So 10 months is a year, so that's 52 years and 23 days.
So you've got 9 weeks, which is two and a bit months. You've got 16 days, which is 2 and a bit weeks. So that's actually 11 weeks, which is nearly 3 months.
Yeah. Nah. Yeah. Oh, yeah, 16 days is...
There's 7 days in a week, Yannick.
Yeah.
Kaczynski, Riker, and Argyle arrive on the bridge. Picard asked them what happened, and Kaczynski replied that he made a mistake, a wonderful mistake. He is highly excited, claiming that he has broken the warp barrier. Argyle suggests that it should be called the Kaczynski scale, but the sarcasm is lost in Kaczynski's overinflated opinion of himself, suggesting that his name will go down in history. However, hearing the procedure that Kaczynski used, Commander Riker is not convinced.
No. I mean, at this point, I was like, okay, you don't know Jack about what you've done, and you're just trying to, you know, drown them in words and technobabble that But yeah,
but he was fooling nobody. I mean, obviously nothing's been confirmed at this point, but pretty much everybody he's spoken to is saying, what is he talking about? He's just spouting noise.
Yeah.
Picard asks Kaczynski if he can do it again to take them home. Of course I can, he says, and heads back to engineering. Looking around at his crew, Picard invites comment. Troy says that Kaczynski believes that he's right. Worf says that you can't trust him because he's already made that mistake once, what's to say he's not going to make that mistake again. LaForge doesn't think they have a choice but to allow Kaczynski to get them home. And Data is interested in studying the local environment.
I have a remark for Worf, as in, if Picard was not allowing anyone who made a mistake to, you know, try again, then at least Wesley wouldn't be around. Geordi wouldn't be around, you know, being infected by a virus and then infecting the whole ship. A lot of people made mistakes in those first, four or five episodes. So you should have known better.
But not in that episode.
Not in that episode.
Because we mentioned this last week when we were talking about, was it last week? When we mentioned, it might be the week before actually, when we mentioned about Wesley and Wesley being allowed.
Yeah, it was last week.
Back on the bridge. And we were up, saying, you know, did you not remember exactly what happened on the on the previous episode?
Yeah.
But again, this might be to do with the fact that they're not retaining chronology through the episodes, so anything that happened in a previous episode is just lost to history.
Lost, yes.
Picard believes that if they can get home, Starfleet can use Kaczynski's technique to get back to their current position, but with a science vessel, and orders that Kaczynski gets them home. Yeah. Down in engineering, Wesley is talking to the assistant. He realises that the assistant has been performing the upgrades all along, and that Kaczynski is just a joke.
No.
Didn't see that coming. Not. The assistant tells him that he means no harm to the ship or the crew. He just made a mistake. But now he's exhausted, and Wes offers to get his mother, but the assistant declines. Wes then says that from looking at the warp equations, he thinks time and space and thought are all one thing. This surprises the assistant, who tells him never to say such a thing again, in a world that's not ready for it.
Yeah, I was. How did Wesley figure that out? I mean, okay, he's brilliant. We've established that by now, but that's an entire new, you know, field of study, if I can call it that. And just like that, Wesley knows about that. I mean, I was like, no, that's a bit too much.
I do agree with you there, but I think you did say it, that Wesley is brilliant and he is capable of grasping ideas and concepts that most other people just, you know, wouldn't even think of. We've seen him in action on the ship. We've seen the kind of things he can do. Obviously, it could just have been an over-exaggerated script. His character might be flawed in that respect, but at the same time, he could be something a lot more special than we actually realise. But that's not possible. To spoil the rest of the episode. Wes tries to tell Riker about the assistant, but he won't listen. Kaczynski sets up to return them home, and the Enterprise shoots into warp with another tremendous burst of speed. As they input the equations, it becomes obvious to Kaczynski that this is not working. But this time, Riker sees the assistant as he starts to phase in and out again, and then collapse across the console.
I just don't understand how it can affect the engine by, you know, just phasing. But again, that's a whole point of the episode. That's it's something that we may not be supposed to understand. I guess the phasing was just a way to do some kind of special effects and realize that there was something weird with the assistant.
Probably. It did occur to me that maybe he was a species or from a species that was based on light, and that maybe traveling at the velocities that they are is affecting his ability to be in that location because of him being composed of light. But I don't know. We don't get much more about the assistant as we currently know him until much later on in the series. So I don't know. I'm not sure we're going to find out anything about him here.
No, and as I said, we might not be supposed to. It's something that he's a member of a species that are very powerful, obviously, and. He has powers that we don't understand.
Mm.
And that's it.
Meanwhile, the Enterprise picks up incredible speed, moving into untold measurements. On the view screen, spatial phenomena streak past faster and faster into indistinguishable light blurs. Picard orders full stop, and the Enterprise drops out of warp once more. But they are certainly not back in their own galaxy. Outside the ship, clouds of cosmic dust and energy beings swim in a never-ending blue abyss. Data concludes that they must be at the edge of the known universe, where none have gone before.
Yes, which is not the title of this episode.
No, it isn't. But that wouldn't work grammatically, so... question about the travelling. I mean, this is kind of a warp question as much as it is a traveling at stupid multiples of light speed. How are they able to avoid crashing into objects at that speed? Because if you hit anything at that speed, you're going to cause some damage. And I wouldn't have imagined if you are traveling at 900 times the speed of light that you're going to be able to maneuver around something quickly enough in order to avoid it.
Yeah, that's maybe the warp bubble protects the ship from that. Because the ship goes faster than light, but the space around it, I don't know.
No, unless it acts like a snowplow, just kind of like travels through things.
But then it should shoot every debris, greater distance.
Yeah, because when you travel stars.
You travel 900 times, 9,000 times the speed of light, probably when you hit something, it's going to bounce back.
Yeah, you'd think so, by quite a margin. Like, you'd end up knocking a moon into another galaxy or something.
Something like that, yes. Yeah.
She has now appeared on screen possibly 3, maybe 4 times so far this episode, and yet she's not said anything.
Not yet.
No, not yet. I don't know how it works in US television shows in the 1980s, but certainly here in the UK, you can always tell, I might have said this before actually, you can always tell where someone's been paid for an acting role because they say something.
We already talked about that in some of the Enterprise episodes.
Right, where
we had some secondary actors
that
never said anything.
Cause
so maybe there's one rate for, just standing in there, and one rate if you have to learn and memorize a line and then say it back.
Yeah, but as you quite rightly said, Yar does speak a bit later on, so that's kind of that idea out of the equation. Unless it's done based on screen time. Amount of minutes speaking or whatever.
I don't know how they did that back then, as you mentioned, but I'm pretty sure that the main actors of a series, they're not paid on, but you know, by the time they appear, but
they're paid for the episode. In the,
yeah, they're in the episode or they're not, and that should not change anything. I didn't think so, anyway.
Mm.
Also, how was Picard supposed to bring the Enterprise back where it started? By randomly waiting a certain amount of time and then ordering, you know, to get out of warp? They didn't have like, okay, we've traveled, the first time we've traveled, 3.72 minutes, and then we're going to do exactly the same thing. No, they just came back, and then at some point, Picard said, all right, stop. So, I mean, it would have been a very, very coincidental. I don't know. You know, that they would be at the same point at the, where they started.
Yeah, because it would only be a matter of seconds to enter the...
Milliseconds.
To enter the galaxy at one end and end it, exit it at the other end.
More than...
9,000 times the speed of light,
No, more than that. 9,000 times the speed of light is warp 9.99, roughly.
Mm. You know,
give or take a call.
Oh, yeah, so no, be much more than that.
They should have been very precise, and but they were not. They were like, okay, that's it. Now is a good time. Chris says that background actors get a flat per day rate. So that's probably relevant to the Enterprise actors and maybe a lot of Star Trek, how do you call that? Standing backgrounds? But I don't know. People who just
extras.
Stand there and say nothing. Extras.
Yeah.
Yes, thank you.
So one of the chaps that got me into podcasting back in 2008, he appeared in a very popular TV show here in the UK as an extra. He actually ended up with a speaking line, which doesn't, you know, he's more than an extra. But he still didn't get paid for it.
Oh.
So I think with a lot of extras, you're like, you're being given the opportunity to be on national television. That should be payment in itself. But yeah, I think he said one line. It was a good line. Don't get me wrong, but. Anyway, we're about to find out exactly what has happened to the Enterprise as we enter Act 3. The Enterprise is now a billion light years from the Milky Way galaxy in the other direction. In frustration, Picard leaves for engineering. Well, I'd probably do the same.
Yeah.
To overshoot by 2.793 million light years... it's not good.
Yeah, no.
And kind of support place, your argument.
The place they were, it almost looked like they were like in some kind of biological things. You know, it wouldn't have surprised me to learn that they had been minimized to a very 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 small size, and what we were seeing was actually, you know, I don't know. Globules or you know, cells or something like that. Did look like
unless the view screen was still set to the same mode of the Ferengi from last week, so everything was just like so much bigger and in your face. But yeah, that was a really really odd environment they were going through.
I'm
surprised that if the light, bright blue things we were seeing that were kind of floating around, that they didn't immediately attack Enterprise because it's a foreign object in their space.
A foreign,
literally.
Foreign body, yeah?
Yeah. So, don't know.
Me neither.
So the crew now starts to see things that, quite frankly, cannot be there. Worf is at his station when he suddenly sees a Klingon Targ in front of him, his childhood pet. Yar also sees it, but it disappears just as quickly. Then she sees her pet cat and is back on the colony where she grew up. The Forge touches her and she snaps out of it. When the turbo lift doors open, Picard almost steps out into open space before throwing himself back inside the turbo lift. The doors open again, and he walks into a corridor on the ship. He then meets two crewmen running away from some unseen pursuer. Further down the corridor, he sees an ensign in a cargo bay dancing ballet, whilst elsewhere, another crewman is performing the first movement of Mozart's Eine kleine Nachtmusik with a baroque-looking string quartet.
Yeah.
What?
What is
they're
going
on? They're on something.
Yeah.
This is like an acid trip.
Yeah, so I think it started with the Targ.
Yes.
And then the guy who played music, at first I was like, okay, he's playing music, but he looks pretty normal.
Well, we didn't see his uniform originally. When the camera panned around, he was being obscured by another musician in front of us.
Yeah, but I mean, it could have been a holo program or something like that. So it's not until later on that we discover that he's actually sitting at his dining table.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I mean, that whole scene, the whole series, sequence of events, actually looked really good the way they did it.
Yeah, yes,
they could have been genuine encounters.
Yeah, it was very nice.
I presume that these were either memories from their past, or perhaps even fears from their past. Because most of them, so Worf saw his pet, Yar saw her pet, but also a negative memory from her childhood. The ensign dancing ballet, she could have done dance when she was growing up. Picard stepping out into space, that was a curveball. I didn't quite understand where that one came from. Unless it is something that's happened before, it might have been related to something that happened in his past. I don't know. But that one didn't quite sit right with the others.
No. No, but as you said, the whole scene was very well done.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, and Worf smiled.
Yes.
I don't think I've ever seen him do it any other time. No.
Who would have thought that a Targ would make Worf smile?
I've never seen a Klingon smile.
No,
that's not true. I have seen a Klingon smile.
He's been raised by humans, so that maybe there's a
I suppose. Something there. Yeah, that would make sense. The visions of thought, seeming to become visual reality, soon become more evident to the captain, when he then sees his dead mother drinking tea in a corridor, and starts to talk to her before he is interrupted by Riker. When he looks back, she's gone. Picard realises he must get the crew's attention quickly to prevent their thoughts from causing a catastrophe. He immediately orders general quarters and goes to engineering. He tells the crew that they are in a region of space where thoughts become reality and that they must try to subdue their thoughts.
Which is not an easy thing to do.
No.
Why did they have to give Picard's mother a strong French accent? A fake strong French accent.
I don't know, but also he called her Maman.
Yes.
Rather than Mother, as I would have expected him to have said.
Which means the same thing.
But yeah, it does, but obviously in French.
Yeah, yeah.
We know a reason. Well, in the timeline we don't, but we know now that there's a very strong French connection in his ancestry. But
yeah, but we also know that French is dead. It's a dead language.
It's a ceremonial language.
So her mother should not have a French accent.
You would think not. But the thing about French being Ceremonial came out in Picard, not in The Next Generation. So maybe they hadn't actually built up that part of the story enough.
No, because on last week's episode, Data said that French was an obscure language. It was already dead.
Of course he did.
So, I mean, they can learn to speak French, and that would be a reason why they would speak French with an English accent or an American accent, even though they are of French heritage. But that doesn't explain why she had a French accent, because she probably spoke English her whole life as everyone else on the planet.
But again, this was his thought projection.
Yes.
Not necessarily a depiction of the past. So it might be, if he has strong ties to his French ancestral heritage, then it might be as part of his fantasy of his family that they spoke French and spoke with a rather unconvincing French accent, and he called her Maman.
Okay, I will give you that.
I'm just spitballing, I think they call it. In engineering, Dr. Crusher is examining the now unconscious assistant. Riker informs Picard that it was the assistant the whole time, not Kaczynski, who thought it was him. It was Wesley who worked it out, but Riker admits that Wesley did try to tell him... Riker admits that Wesley did try to tell him twice, but he didn't listen.
Riker and Risley.
Riker and Risley.
That could be the name of a series.
Riker and Risley, private investigators.
Yeah, or cops.
Yeah.
At worst.
Attorneys at law.
When was the second time Risley tried to convince Riker that the assistant was doing the job? Because I noticed it once.
I remember it once.
Yeah. So maybe there was a scene that was kept.
Possibly. Or maybe they felt
one was not enough.
Well, Riker was actually being quite honest and upfront about it, and that maybe the impact of Wesley again, that the impact of Wesley telling him once that he thought that it was the assistant doing the work, not Kaczynski, didn't carry enough.
Just wanted
enough reason to mention it. But the fact that he mentioned it twice, and he's actually come up and admitted in front of Picard that, you know, he did try and tell me twice, and I ignored him.
I understand that. Yeah, he was playing for Wesley.
Yeah. That's a good point, because Picard was actually. I'm thinking of a word.
If you knew something, why didn't you say so?
Yeah, he was challenging Wesley as to why he didn't say anything. Mm-hmm. So yeah. All right, on to Act 4 then. Not doing too badly for time. The assistant is then brought to sickbay, where Picard tells Crusher to wake him up. They must leave this place before their own thoughts cause the ship to be destroyed. The assistant wakes and tells Picard that he is a traveller from another plane of existence. He's travelling through their galaxy, observing them, using his knowledge of propulsion to get passage on Starfleet ships. Kaczynski is just his cover. He meant no harm to the Enterprise. He tells them humans shouldn't be here until their distant future, until they have learned to control their thoughts. Picard asks him if he can get them home. He tells him he will try.
Yeah. So we have the beginning of an explanation. What we don't know is how the traveler got to work, quote unquote, with Kaczynski. Because
no, I have a theory, but but
Kozinski was convinced he was the one doing the adjustments. But
yeah, so my thought is that Kozinski was effectively mind controlling, for want of a better phrase. The assistant, the traveler, was mind controlling Kozinski, telling him what he needs to do in such a way that he thinks that the ideas are coming out of his own head.
Maybe, yeah.
Almost using him as a host.
Mm-hmm. There's nothing to prove that, but there's also nothing to contradict that. So
yeah, it's just a theory.
Mm-hmm.
Also, for the traveler to say that humans shouldn't be here, now here obviously is referring to this billion light years away from the Milky Way, until mm-hmm. their distant future. But how... he must know where they are, if that's the case. For him to say, you shouldn't be here yet, the traveler must know where they are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's reasonable.
Mm. Riker asks the traveler why there has been no record of his kind in the past, to which the traveler replies that humans have so far been uninteresting to them, and that it's only now that they have merited attention.
Yeah,
how rude is that?
But that was my quote of the week.
Oh,
yeah, well,
quite right too. Know. Yeah,
we've never been there because there was no reason to be there.
Yes, we came here looking for intelligent life. Oops. The traveler then asks for a private word with Picard. The others leave, and the traveler tells Picard that people like Wesley are the reason that he travels. He compares him to Mozart, only instead of music, Wes has, or at least will have, the ability to manipulate time, space, and thought. He urges Picard to encourage Wesley, but not to tell him or his mother about any of this. The traveler then starts to weaken, and Picard helps him up to Riker to go to engineering.
Yeah, so that gives us a little insight into Wesley's future. Although I don't remember that we learn of Wesley manipulating thoughts later on, but...
No. But it does explain... I think that small conversation... it explains a lot about the traveler himself. I know he was talking about yes. Wesley and about Wesley's potential future, mm-hmm. but I think he was also telling about himself. So the reason that we're able to do this is because he is able to manipulate space, time, and thought.
Agreed. And also that gives the writers an excuse or a an excuse to do what we're going to describe at the end of this episode, because we're not spoiling a 33-year-old episode.
Yes, that thing that I don't think they should have done, but yeah. Picard hurries to the bridge, helping a crewman on the way to put out a fire that he's created in his thoughts.
Yeah, and the crewman just walks away as if nothing had happened.
The whole thing was just... not only did Picard handle it casually, the crewman handled it casually, the review even handled it casually. Picard hurries to the bridge, helping a crewman on the way to put out a fire he's created.
Yes.
Yeah, whatever.
Business as usual.
Yeah,
Business as usual.
It happens every single day.
Every day.
Right, we're on to Act 5. We're almost there.
Final act.
Well, I say we're almost there. We're still a billion light years away, but we're almost there. So at the beginning of Act 5, there is a captain's log, which starts with the words... I love this. Starts with the words, captain's log. Any time entry is meaningless. Oh, dear. No. Yeah, a star date doesn't really quite make sense at that point.
No.
The traveller prepares to engineering, and Picard makes a ship-wide announcement telling everybody to concentrate on home and on the traveller's well-being. They follow the same procedure as before. The ship jumps to warp 1.5, and the Traveller uses his powers to attempt to send them back. He starts to struggle in his work until Wesley holds out his hand, and the Traveller takes hold of it, if only briefly. It's almost as if the contact with Wesley has channeled energy into him. He starts to phase in and out as before, and the ship accelerates and hurtles through space. Suddenly, the Traveller disappears altogether, and the Enterprise finds itself right back where it started.
Yeah, surprise. There's, once again, I think it's Picard who ordered to get out of warp. So not very precise measurements, but yeah, hey, it worked.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
Because Picard is that good.
Well, if they were traveling beyond warp 10, then you know what? I've got nothing. Take that bit out. I was trying to get towards the idea that at warp 10 or beyond, they are everywhere. Therefore, it doesn't matter how long it takes them to stop because they'll always end up where they want to be because they're everywhere. It's not about the velocity. Yeah. It's about where you want to get to.
Yeah. Except they are not at warp 10.
Well,
they are way faster than that. Well, actually, they are at warp 1.5.
Well, the instruments are telling them they're at 1.5.
Yes.
So I'm trying to work out how that was done. The only thing I can think of is that if they're traveling at 1.5, they're then in a bubble, mm-hmm. which is traveling at warp 1.5. If mm-hmm. that bubble then gets picked up and moved, well, then you're still traveling at 1.5 warp in a bubble, but someone's picked up the bubble and moved it somewhere else.
Yes, relative speed, yes.
Yeah, if you like. Mm-hmm. I'm sure Einstein spoke about that one time.
Probably.
Mindful of the Traveller's advice, Picard calls Wesley to the bridge and thanks him for his part in their successful return. He then offers Wesley to sit at the command post, but Riker tells him that his own order prevents him from allowing it. So, Picard makes Wesley an acting ensign, for conduct in the true spirit and traditions of Starfleet. He instructs Riker to make out a duty roster for him, and tells him to learn the ship and its operations from top to bottom. Then Wesley takes a seat on the bridge as the Enterprise resumes course. Well, he didn't take a seat, yeah. He kind of perched on a ledge.
Yeah, I liked the interaction between Riker and Picard on this one.
It was very, very good. It was a very good example of the two of them being incredibly in tune.
Yes, because I'm pretty sure Riker didn't have any idea what Picard was going to do, and yet he picked up on the idea very quickly.
Yes.
And he went with Picard. So,
yeah,
that was great.
It was very good. The scene itself was very cheesy, indeed. The whole thing about, you know, making him an ensign and then going through and setting him up literally in the next 10 seconds, setting up his training plan and the roles and responsibilities he's got to do as an ensign. It may become permanent, but I tell you what, it was a very moving scene. I was quite moved by it. But I am really quite disappointed that he got to that stage that quickly. I would have far preferred Wesley to have done a heck of a lot more work to A, get into Picard's good books, because Wesley is still a child and Picard doesn't get on with children. So there's that bit that's been kind of discarded. The fact that it was remembered, because Wesley wouldn't come out of the turbo lift, so Wesley remembered that Picard had previously banished him from the bridge.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I think they could have done that last scene almost at the last episode of the season as something positive.
Yeah.
That Wesley has worked towards. You know, he's helped out. He's done some good stuff towards the towards missions and to the ship.
So from a character perspective, from the perspective of Picard not being very fond of children, is not just any children, is Jack Crusher's child. So that you have to keep that in mind. We've already stated that in the previous episodes. Now, from a show perspective, from a viewer's perspective, yes, it would have probably been a lot more interesting to wait before doing that. But if you're going to have a child running around your ship, running your engineering, sitting at ops, and so on, then you can't do that with a civilian. So, sort of makes sense. If they wanted to integrate Wesley more into the stories, they had to make him an official, a field commissioned ensign.
Yes. They should have checked with Beverly first, though.
Because he's a minor?
Because he's a minor.
Yeah.
I am really scraping the barrel on this one, but...
Yeah.
I guess that it wouldn't have had the spontaneity of it if they'd had to go through the stage of asking for Beverly's permission, blah, 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 blah. But, yeah.
Actually, talking about Beverly, that's my second quote of the week in this scene, when Riker says that, asks Picard if he should call Dr. Crusher, and Picard responds, "Why, is there somebody here?"
Yes. Yes.
That was funny.
That was, yeah, typically Picard. Hey-ho.
Yeah.
I loved this episode. I thought it was an incredibly good one. I mean, last week's episode was good, but this one is, I think, so far the best in the season. The storyline was great. It actually reminded me a bit of another storyline we saw in Enterprise, but I can't remember which episode it was particularly. But yeah, it was engaging. There was nothing really to pick holes in, and it was a good story.
Except the cheesy special effects, and sometimes the music. You know, 1980s.
It was right for the time.
That's it. Yeah. Yeah, and the music especially is really kind of reminded me the music of the original Star Trek movie, which is just this kind of mood music, things like that.
I did notice in the
Tron, actually, the same music as in Tron.
Again, it probably would have inspired it to some extent. Mm-hmm. In the second scene of trying to go into this enhanced warp mode, where Kaczynski thought he was doing it by himself, there was quite an upbeat and light version of the theme tune playing in the background at the same time.
I didn't notice that. Okay.
A couple of bits of trivia for you. Mm-hmm. So this is actually an arc, a 3-episode arc.
Yes. I've seen two of them yet already. Mm? I've seen two of them. I'm in the middle of season 4.
Yeah. So season 4, episode 5 was the second one. Remember me. And the third one was actually right near the end of season 7, called Journey's End, which also features the Traveller. But this is what I was saying earlier on about trying to get a handle on who the Traveller was and what he was doing, that we're not really going to find out anything about it. But if it takes, you know, 4 years, sorry, 3 years for the second appearance, and then another 3 years, 3.5 years in this case, for the third appearance, then it's just a character. It's not not entity we're actually supposed to get to know.
No.
I did have a look
one
to
of
see.
Those things,
sorry,
it's one of those things in Star Trek that we just, you know, take like that and then just accept that we won't know anything about but them.
Yeah, which is fair. I did check to see if this was in any way related to Where No Man Has Gone Before, which was the second pilot of the original series. And the apart from the fact they end up at the end of a galaxy or the end of a known universe, there are no similarities between it. It's not like The Naked Now, which was a natural follow-on from The Naked Time. This is a completely unrelated episode to that one.
Yes, but maybe they choose this specific title for the reason why they were stranded in the far away.
Yeah, yeah, most likely. Mm-hmm. The other bit of trivia is Maman, played Yvette Picard. Her name in real life is Herta Ware. She's actually American. She's not French at all, which explains the really bad French accent. Her daughter, Ellen Greer, so I think it probably should be Greer, actually. Helen Greer actually appeared in another TNG episode. And her granddaughter, Willow Greer, was in an episode of Picard. Oh. She was one of the refugees in Absolute Candor.
Okay.
So definitely a family tradition of appearing in the Star Trek series.
Mm-hmm.
That's all I've got from that.
All right. Okay. Yeah, so, yeah, as we said, great episode, and I think we're now in the good episodes of the first season. I don't remember. Well, there's probably ups and downs, but from there, they're all good episodes. At least a lot better than the first couple of the first three we had.
Yeah,
so that's pretty good.
Yeah, no, absolutely. This one was actually produced before last week's episode.
Mm-hmm.
We kind of get back into the swing of things next week, where we're further forward in the production chronology. It's not until episode 11 that we actually drop back to an earlier episode. So we might see a slight drop in quality there, but I don't know. We shall see. So
we will see.
Indeed. Have you got anything else to add on this review?
No.
Right. No. Then
I liked this episode.
Yeah.
That's all I have to say.
So we shall terminate, conclude, end. I don't know. Data should be here to help with this one. Our review of Star Trek Season 1, Episode 6, Where No One Has Gone Before.
So we are going to go back to our usual news roundup segment of our episode when we don't have any guests. We have two pieces of news for this fortnight. And the first one is the big news. Star Trek Strange New Worlds has been announced.
Yay!
On Friday, CBS. Yay! On Friday, CBS All Access announced that it has ordered a Star Trek Discovery spin-off titled Star Trek Strange New Worlds. The new Star Trek series will follow Captain Christopher Pike and the rest of the crew of the USS Enterprise in the decade before the original Star Trek television series. The new series will bring back the cast from the second season of Discovery. Anson Mount returns as Captain Christopher Pike. Rebecca Romijn will reprise her role as Number One. Ethan Peck will return as Science Officer Spock. Though not the first one, Pike was captain of the famed Enterprise, NCC-1701 with no bloody A, B, C, or D, before James T. Kirk. Since Captain Pike debuted in Season 2 of Star Trek Discovery, fans have been clamoring for a show about the Enterprise captain. They'll now get just that, as Pike's voyages will continue on in new series. Yoo-hoo!
We knew this was going to happen anyway, but to have it actually written down and confirmed, this was on comicbook.com, I think.
Yeah, well, yes. It was all over Twitter.
But yeah, it's been confirmed by Star Trek as well. It's such good news. And I'm really pleased with the name of it because it has a lot more scope by not having it called Star Trek Pike.
Yes.
A lot more scope. It can go to well, Strange New Worlds, literally.
Yes, it's on the title.
The interesting thing about it, because I know we were having discussions about what the three-letter acronym would be for Pike. Mm-hmm. So it could be
Pick. So we don't have to worry about that today.
But now it's going to be Star Trek Snow.
Yes, Star Trek Snow.
SNW.
As I said in our Telegram group at t.me/tghpodcast.
Ooh, cha-ching. Ooh. But yeah, that is phenomenal news. I'm so pleased. Yeah. But when it's going to happen, you know, who knows?
We don't know. But it's been confirmed. I guess, how long did it take between... It take a few years between the confirmation of Discovery and the actual first episode?
I don't know. I only found out about Discovery about 6 months before it happened. That's did me. We? Picard
because I remember
was about 18 months.
I remember I was still in the apartment before moving in this house that we chatted about a new Star Trek series that would only be online, that would only be on CBS All Access. And I'm pretty sure that was Discovery. And it's been a while since I moved in here. But again, there's been already two years. So
Discovery isn't on CBS All Access. All Access.
On Netflix.
It's on Netflix, yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. Maybe it was another thing. But I guess in a normal time, I would say about between 6 months and a year before they start, you know, maybe releasing trailers and things like that. But I'm not sure they are allowed to start shooting right now.
No, I wouldn't imagine so.
So my guess would be 2021, late 2021, early 2022.
So something like that. The Picard timeline, Patrick Stewart announced it at the Star Trek Las Vegas in August 2018. And the first episode dropped in January 2020. So less than 18 months.
A year and a half.
Yeah.
Yeah. A year and a half. Yeah. So, and end of 2021. Probably January 2022.
Well, I'm happy to wait because we've got season 3 of Discovery to come first.
Yes.
We may even have the second series of Picard before that. And
Section 31.
Well, that's not been announced yet, so that may not happen before Strange New Worlds. But there has been murmurings of a new animated series.
Lower Decks? Lower Decks is already a thing.
It is. No, this is a Nickelodeon show.
Oh. Yeah.
But whether we're going to get that or not, I don't know. But if it's canon, then we should cover it.
To be fair, I largely prefer to have Star Trek Strange New World first than Star Trek Section 31. I will watch that. But if it doesn't happen, don't care.
The response to Pike out of Discovery has been phenomenal.
Yeah.
It's been a universal appreciation of Anson Mount as Captain Pike.
Yeah.
Whereas Giorgio /31, I don't know.
Yeah, it didn't get any momentum.
Not really, no. Because I think I was marginally disappointed. I mean, I was quite disappointed when Giorgio was killed in season 1 of Discovery anyway. But then when she ended up coming back at the end of season one, I was like, what? How are you going to do this?
They still have to work out how they will feature JoJo in Star Trek Section 31.
930 years in the future. Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So
yeah.
It could be Star Trek Section 31 in the future. I don't know.
Yeah.
You know, maybe she's going to start Section 31 again, but in the future. I don't know. And I don't really care.
Well, if the Tal Shiar has survived for, was it hundreds of thousands of years or something stupid?
Yeah.
Then, yeah. You know, Section 31, which is probably as bad.
Yeah.
I'm sure they can survive best part of a millennium.
Sure. Our second piece of news is that there's going to be a Star Trek Voyager reunion. It is happening. The Star Trek Voyager cast is set to reunite in celebration of the series' 25th anniversary. This provides Star Trek Voyager fans with another reason to celebrate the series beyond the upcoming Voyager novel and the Rewatch podcast. Seth Rudetsky and James Wesley announced on Tuesday that the reunion will take place live on Star Trek in the House. The reunion is set on Tuesday, May 26th at 8 p.m. Eastern Time, and fans can watch via the Stars in the House YouTube channel and website. Cast members participating in the reunion include Kate Mulgrew as Catherine Janeway, Jerry Ryan, of course, Seven of Nine, Roxanne Dawson, Belena Torres, Robert Beltram, Chakotay, Robert Duncan McNeil, Tom Paris, Robert Picardo, the Doctor, that's a whole bunch of Roberts, Ethan Phillips as Neelix, and Garrett Wong as Harry Kim, in support of the Actors Fund. Fans will watch the Voyager cast in real-time sharing stories from their journey through the Delta Quadrant, and fans can also donate to the Actors Fund for the chance to have their names read during the reunion. It will also feature live music. This reunion will be both gratifying and novel. We are all alive, we are all congenial, and we are still actors, said Kate Mulgrew. Yeah. So there you go, Voyager fans, on Tuesday, May 26th. So that's less than a week from today. Hopefully the show will be out before this, so you can still go and watch it. It all depends if I find time to edit the show or not.
Yes.
I'm 8 p.m. Eastern. That's three in the morning. For us?
Minus six to you, so two in the morning.
Six? Oh, yes. Six. So that's... No, that's not minus six. That's plus six. Yeah, so that's two in the morning.
Yes, yeah.
Which plus six or minus six is the same, but yeah. So that's two in the morning. I might not watch that. But if it's on YouTube, maybe I can watch
it later. If they have a replay.
Yes.
And the beauty of this is that it caters for both sides of the fence. If you're a fan of Voyager, then you can go and watch this. If you dislike Voyager, you can choose not to. And I love that idea. I love that you have the choice.
Yes. Yeah. Well, I'm sure it could be interesting. I like the behind the scenes stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, whether you're a fan or not of the show. It's always interesting to actually hear the actors talk about their job and what they did. And I would like to have a chance to watch what we left behind, the Deep Space Nine documentary. I haven't had a chance to find it somewhere.
No, that's a good point. Although I'm not sure whether that would work for me, bearing in mind I haven't actually seen any of Deep Space Nine.
I'm pretty sure
it might not work for somebody as unenlightened as I.
Yeah, it's the kind of documentary that will appeal to fans of the series who've watched it and appreciated it.
Absolutely. Well, so good.
Lenny
good news.
Says that there's a replay after the recordings and in the stars, the House of Stars, the Stars in the House. I have already forgotten. Star in the House.
Apparently, they do two shows a day.
Yeah.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Fantastic. Right. Thank you very much indeed to Lainey, who has just made us aware of the British Podcast Awards for 2020, which has opened, at the time of recording, opened yesterday. So we would love it. We would absolutely love it if you would be willing to vote for us at the British Podcast Awards. You can vote once for any podcast you wish. I mean, we have other podcasts. Head over to otherside.network. You can vote for all of them. They're all brilliant.
Oh, well done.
Vote for us as well. if you go over to britishpodcastawards.com/vote, you can vote for us at any time up to the 6th of July, 2020. But, you know, do it now rather than later. If you so desire, it would be fantastic. We'd be very grateful if you would vote for us over at the Listener's Choice British Podcast Awards.
Yes, absolutely. And I would try to find a Swiss Podcast Award if that even exists.
We could start one, but now the only problem with actually running one is that you obviously become ineligible to participate. Yeah. In case people think you're cheating.
Do you think we can vote for our own shows? I haven't read the terms and agreements.
Read the rules.
Yeah, we're gonna have to read the rules.
You can vote.
But thanks to Lainey, who already voted for us, and for another show, a small show called The Buckcast or something.
It doesn't say you can't vote for your own podcast.
All right.
We can only vote once anyway, so you'd only have influence of one vote.
How did Lenny vote twice then? Dun, dun, dun.
Oh, no, you can only vote for one podcast once. She voted for two podcasts.
Oh, okay. So I can vote for us and then for the podcast.
Yep.
Okay.
But not Utopia Radio, sadly.
Nah.
Cry.
Nah. Well, as I mentioned to you earlier, I have picked up another hobby, so it's not like I have time to do that anyway, but
that new hobby would actually align itself quite nicely to your other podcast, Maker's Corner.
Yes,
over at makerscorner.tech. Cha-ching.
Thank you.
This is a plug fest episode. Fantastic. And of course, I believe because Maker's Corner is also on iTunes, on Apple Podcasts.
Yeah,
then you can vote for that at the British Podcast Awards as well. Well, no, you can't because it's not a British
show.
British show. Oh,
it's a Swiss, US Swiss show.
Oh,
so.
What a shame.
Yeah.
Oh, well, never mind.
That's okay. We will win with Cheer Grey Out anyway. So,
of course. We'll be the best show called Cheer Grey Out.
Absolutely.
Yeah. That's something to aim for.
That's not enough. We will be the best show called Tear Grey Hot with two hosts, one from Switzerland and one from the UK.
Yeah. Wow. Can we put that on our boilerplate? Because that's...
Sure.
that's quite an achievement. Fantastic. Anyway, so I think we should head for a little bit of housekeeping. So thank you to everybody who has downloaded our previous episodes. We really appreciate you spending just a little bit of your time to listen to us. You can help us spread the love for this show by sending your children back to school with wrapped and sterilised Tea Earl Grey Hot branded USB sticks with our entire back catalogue of episodes on to hand out to their friends. Or you can simply post our website address on social media.
You know what? We could actually do something like that. Order some TGH branded USB stick and put our episodes on there.
Yeah. Why not?
Yeah, why not? And you give that away when we go to conventions and like next time we go to Upcomp in 2032.
Yeah. After the third lockdown. Yes.
Yeah. Our website is teaearlgreyhot.org, where you can find our show notes, our reviews, and leave a comment for every episode on the form on the episodes page for the entire catalogue.
Indeed. You can, if you wish, run your augmented warp drive back 300,000 million light years away and send us an email. Feedback at tlgreyhot.com. Is our address. We read everything we receive, and if, unless you tell us otherwise, we may read your email out on the show.
Yes, we are also mainly on Twitter at TEGHpodcast and also on Telegram at t.me/TEGHpodcast, and that's the only place you will get the link to our unlisted live stream if you want to chat with us as Lainey and Chris did tonight. Thank you, ladies.
Yes, thank you very much. Thanks as always to Memory Alpha. We have based our review of this week's episode on their work, and this is released under a Creative Commons by Attribution non-commercial license.
The rest of the show is released under a Creative Commons by Attribution share-alike license. See our website for details.
This podcast is a part of the previously mentioned Other Side Podcast Network. Check out all of our shows over at the website at otherside.network.
Our next episode will be a review of Star Trek The Next Generation Season 1 Episode 7, Lonely Among Us. And that brings us to the end of this week's episode. Thank you, Dave, for joining me this week.
Not at all. Again. I actually enjoyed it this time. It was a nice experience.
First time in 41 recordings. Yeah, great.
No, second time. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
41 recordings? We've not done that many.
Yeah. That's episode 39.
Oh my goodness, it is, isn't it? I even said it at the beginning of the show. Wow. That means episode 40 next week. That's that's a nice little milestone.
Absolutely.
Or millstone.
Once again, thank you, Lainey. Thank you, Chris, for joining us in the live chat room. We will be back next week with a whole bunch more of Star Trek. In the meantime, take care of yourselves. Ciao, ciao.
Adios. Hello and welcome to episode 39 of TL Grey Hot, an unofficial I wrote that and it doesn't make sense. Hang on a second.
You've been listening to a member of the Other Side Podcast Network. Find more about our shows at othersidenetwork.com.